presence of the Lord is in this place. I can feel God's mighty power and God's grace. I can feel the brush of angel wings. I see glory on each face. Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. I can feel God's mighty power and God's grace. I can feel the brush of angels' wings. I see glory on each face. Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place.
Please join me in prayer. Yes, surely the Lord is in this place, the infinite presence of God. God, the divine spirit that lives in, through, and as each one of us, expressing love and joy and service. God is all there is. And as I recognize God, the divine presence, I recognize God within me as I am one with the divine spirit. As each and every one of us in this room and in this world, in this universe, are one with the infinite presence of God. And I speak a word of blessing on behalf of each one of us here today on this beautiful Sunday at West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I speak a word of blessing knowing that each one of us is an expression of that divine love and peace and service. And I speak a word of blessing on behalf of our beautiful musician, Cerise, as her voice radiates and fills this room with beautiful harmony and brings to us that loving peace and joy expressed in her voice. And I speak a word of blessing on behalf of Reverend Karen, knowing that God speaks through her. And her message is absolutely perfect and exactly what we are here to absorb, what we are here to be, to hear. And I speak a word of blessing on behalf of each one of us here in this room and each one in service today on this beautiful Sunday. And also for all those in other faith traditions, knowing that there are many paths to that one God. And I'm so grateful for this day. I'm so grateful for each one of us in this room. And I let it go and I let it be, knowing that it is all good. And together we say, and so it is. My reading today is from The Ageless Wisdom by Torquem Ceredarian, on page 43. The ageless wisdom requests that we learn to think in abstract and concrete terms simultaneously and be idealistic and practical at the same time. The ageless wisdom is not satisfied with our thinking ability, but requests the development of the heart with compassion, inclusiveness, gratitude, and with other virtues. For the ageless wisdom, even these are not enough. It requests from us to prove our mental capacities and heart qualities with our service. The bigger the field of our service, the higher the number of those who are benefited through our service, the greater will be our speed on our path. The reward of the student of the ageless wisdom is the increase of his labor and in an expanding field of service. It is through thinking and through the heart and through labor that man will increase in wisdom, beauty, understanding, and beingness in the field of his chosen service. Let's take a moment to contemplate that in silence. And so it is.
That we can change. Thank you. That was so beautiful. Tell me again who wrote that song. I did. Is that the song I think you should be famous for? Is that the one I was talking about earlier? You don't even know. That was exquisite and how fitting and how beautiful for the message I'm about to deliver. Good morning. I welcome you once again to this gorgeous sanctuary where we have a powerful message to deliver this morning. And it's wonderful to see that we are interested in being here, in joining in community, in opening ourselves to this idea of serving the world in bigger ways, if not me, if not now. Those are such gorgeous questions for all of us. And I don't think it's an accident that World Day of Service and World Peace Day fall in the same month. And here at the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living, we're honoring both World Peace Day on September 21st. Is that right, Paul? And look who's here today is Mr. Paul. I've been talking about him behind his back for the last couple weeks. And we as an organization, CSL, have created this other special day called World Day of Service. And so our theme for the month that ministers, CSL ministers, are speaking to all around the world has to do with this invitation to service. So I love that glorious, Ricky Byers Beckwith, Use Me. Oh my goodness, doesn't that touch your heart when we sing together the words of that exquisite, it's got a gospel thing to it, which she does well, of course, but We're looking at these opportunities to show up in the world. I'm going to talk to you later about some service opportunities in addition to our Projects of Love team, who I ask them every year to create a space where you as the congregants of this community can come together and create these food bags that we can then pass off to people that come into our church because they're hungry and they're looking for food. We do that every year about this time to coordinate with that World Day of Service. And we are invited. We're not looking for people to help. We're really asking you to get your hands involved. Not only are we looking for non-perishable foods and canned goods to put in the food bags that we have, but we want you to have a part of packing those bags so they can truly be from our community. So thank you for considering that, and it'll be really easy because we do it after service, after the Sunday service next week. So we'll have time to have something to eat, and then we can get our hands dirty, but it probably won't be messy work. It'll be fun and straightforward, and it usually happens very quickly when we get a bunch of people together. And then the other side of that is that on September 21st at 5 a.m. in the morning, we are all setting our phones to our phone alarms to sound off at that exact time. And we're asking you to let your phone, don't shut it off right away, let it ring for 9 seconds. Is that correct? And then we're going to sit for the rest of a 30-second period of time and affirm peace for this planet. And it is a large project, and though Paul is not very tall, he never lets his stature get in the way of his dreams. And so he has arranged for other peace bells around the globe to be rung at exactly that time. And we've all been spreading the message. So we can do that on our own in the privacy of our own homes. You don't even have to get out of bed. and we can affirm peace on that day. Is that a good enough? Did I give a good explanation? Thank you. Yay, he's happy. Good job. All right, so I'm talking about a very serious topic today. As you may have noticed, it's Mother's Bunions. And really, the talk is about, I really wanted to name the talk Prayer Works, but I thought you'd have a higher interest in being here if I titled it Mother's Bunions. So we're talking today about an act of service that unfolds through our prayer work that we do for each other. And as you know, if you have affiliated in any way, or if you've hung out with religious scientists or people that are interested in this science of mind philosophy, one of the things that we believe first and foremost is that prayer works. And so Today, I wanted to not only talk about our interesting slant on affirmative prayer that is unique in all of New Thought. Nobody does it quite like the old religious science way. Because we have a very distinct methodology, a formula, if you will, five steps to spiritual mind treatment, we say sometimes. That's the way we teach it. And there is also sort of a unique way that we talk about praying for others. And so I thought I would do that in a public way. I usually hold this for class time. And the reason I came up with a talk that is about praying for others that will have some suggestions as how to do that effectively is because people come to me all the time and say things like this. Reverend Karen, is it okay to pray for this? Or, Reverend Karen, I want to pray for that, but I'm just not sure. Do we believe it's okay to pray for that? And so what I want to say to you today is it is okay to pray for just about anything. Anything. And there are a few exceptions. We pray only for the highest good of all involved. So we would never do a prayer in which there would have to be a loser. So, Mark Reed, I'm sorry. I can't pray. There you are. I can't pray for your football team because my husband has already got me to pray for his team, which would be on the, you know, so do you see how that works? And I want to tell you, people really do. My son calls me regularly. I can always tell when he's put some money on a game. He calls his mom. Mom, would you just do me this one favor and pray for this team? And no, I won't. I won't. I can't. You know, there was one thing that the Ernest Holmes is the founder of this philosophy, this teaching. And there was one thing that he wrote that he would not pray for, clearly. And that was if you came to him and said, I'm going to court on the 23rd, and I want you to pray that I'll win the case, because I really deserve to win the case. And Ernest Holmes would always decline and say, I cannot do that. I cannot pray for you to win a judgment. I don't want to be involved in your legal dispute. And the best I could do is to pray for the right outcome. And you might not like me if the judgment going in your favor doesn't turn out that way. You might not like that I prayed and the other guy won, because I will pray for the divine justice to be seen in the end, in the resolution of a legal dispute. And I think that's a really good illustration of seeing what we pray and how we pray. So when you don't know, it's always safe to pray for the divine guidance, for the highest and best outcome for all involved. And sometimes when we do that, and if we could get all parties involved in a prayer such as that, sometimes the legal dispute will go away because there doesn't have to be two opposing sides, right? So it is okay for us to pray for goodness of any sort, no matter what somebody needs prayer for. If there seems to be goodness in it, we're going to pray for that goodness as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else, because what this world needs is a little more goodness. So we can all enter into that type of a prayer with a pretty optimistic, almost a joyous expectation that people can get what it is that they desire, that they're requesting prayer for. So it doesn't matter to me if you come to me and you need prayer for a health issue, or if it's about your finances, or it's about the healing of a specific relationship in your life, or if it's about your mother's bunions, it doesn't matter. I'm going to do my best to do a nice, strong, affirmative prayer in the direction that will create what appears to be a healing, but is truly a way that we step up and return to the truth of our being and express our divine wholeness. Now, the only place in this information where we are cautioned to be a little careful is that we don't go around praying for things that we want for other people. Yeah. Yeah, think about that for a minute, because it's really pretty common that, especially if you have like adult children or even grandkids that are getting into some shenanigans, that we want everybody to pray for them to clean up their act and be better people, or to discover their good, and we think we know what their good is, and the truth is, we don't really know what the good for another person is. It's an individualized journey of the soul. And so what I try to remember is that sometimes what I think is the best outcome might not be. Sometimes someone that is struggling with addiction needs to hit bottom before they really get that strong will to live their life differently, to make higher choices, and that has to happen to us in a very personal way. So we can't keep bailing each other out, and we can't always know what the prayer would be if the other person requested it. It probably wouldn't be quite what we are requesting for them. So just be a little careful in that. Remember, it's always safe to pray for the best outcome for that person without putting our judgment or outlining, telling God what it should look like. And I know that's a little confusing, but the way you can use that is to begin to visualize that person living a life that is their highest and best life. What would that look like? You know, what would they... How would they look vibrant and vital and engaged in life again? And we don't know for sure what another's desires are. The second thing I like to say around this idea of praying for other people is that there seems to be something gorgeous about the personal request that we put out. Because when we sit and write out a prayer request, our prayer box on the altar in the corner there by the prayer wall, those prayer requests are confidential and they are only seen by the practitioners and your ministers. And what I know that happens in the way that we are in relationship with this universe is that as we write out that prayer request, something in us begins to open. And we cannot receive the answer to the request for prayer until we open. So think about putting out a request for prayer or writing a prayer request for our prayer wall where we invite public prayer. Think about the way that not only deepens us, but it opens us. And I believe with my whole heart that even as we begin, even now, as some of you are thinking about what it is you want to write on a prayer request slip before you leave here today, even now, the answer to that prayer begins to form. And I'm going to tell you why this morning. So let's say I have a mom who knows I'm really involved in my church and that she knows that we have a ministry of prayer here. And so she has asked me to put in a prayer request so that she can have her good, whether it's her bunions or her or whatever. She comes to me and asks for prayer. That's a healthy start. Somebody else has asked me to pray for them. By the way, sometimes when I'm with people who are telling me their story, something difficult that's going on in their life, I will ask them, would you like me to put in a prayer request for you? And it could be as simple as that. They almost always say yes. I've never had anybody say no. So let's say my mother came to me, and she asked me to pray for, she's getting ready to move to Sun City, and so she's put her home up for sale, and she wants me to pray for her the sale of her home to go smoothly. I could do that. I could totally see my mother having her good in that way. Let's say that my mother came to me because she wants to stop smoking and she wants prayerful support in her giving up her smoking habit. I could totally pray for that. I'm a really good prayer for that one. Let's say she's looking to get a new car. And she's not really confident about the working out the financial arrangements or something. And so she asked me to pray to use that prayer in support of her getting a new car. Can I pray for that? Of course. Yes, I can pray for that. There is a divine intelligence that we can open to for that kind of guidance. Why not? And maybe even she wants to, my mother passed a long time ago, so you know I'm just making this all up. But let's say she was looking for a job. And she came to me and said, could you please pray for me? I want the perfect job. Would you please pray for that? And I would say, absolutely, I would pray for that. And maybe she'd ask me to pray for her bunions. And I could absolutely do that as well. Of course, I might also encourage her to see a doctor, hire a realtor, and fill out a job application. Because here's the deal. Prayer is not magic. Is that sad? I don't want to take it away from you, but prayer is really not magic. Prayer, in the way that we teach it, is scientific, and that's why our founder originally named this philosophy religious science. We're looking at that which works, that which is provable. And you know how we prove our faith? By living it. You know, sometimes we prove it by trying to disprove it. Doesn't matter which approach you take. But we don't use prayer like magic, and we don't see prayer as something supernatural. We don't believe in an entity that has supernatural powers, and that when we pray, we're trying to tap into those supernatural powers. When I talk about God as a presence and a power that's greater than we are, it's not supernatural. It is natural. It is absolutely natural, and we are made in the image and likeness of that. And so, therefore, as we naturally develop a way that we pray, a relationship with the Creator, with Spirit itself, we will see that things change in our lives. We can learn to pray without ceasing. And Ernest Holmes said that praying is useful because this is really key to our teaching. Praying is useful because it keeps us focused on the higher possibilities. Here's what he says. When we pray, we rise above the law of averages. If we don't pray, we just get life as the way it is. So look at what's going on in the world. Do you want that? Or would you like to rise above that and have a higher perspective? And so prayer is so powerful for us because we focus on positive outcome. And see, the average person doesn't focus on positive outcome. The average person is the guy that says, well, if I didn't have bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all. Don't ever say that. That's just not true. Prayer, Ernest Holmes defined prayer as a movement of thought. It starts in our minds, in our consciousness, at the level of thought. Prayer is the conscious movement of thought away from the problem or the challenge and toward that life that we desire to live without the problem. So that's why we can say, change your thinking, and you change your life. So in the same way that we say prayer is not divine intervention, in the same way that we might say a miracle is, we say this here actually, a miracle is a shift in our perception. It's a change in us. It's not an outer change out here. It's the way we become accountable for envisioning that which we desire rather than that which we think we can't have and looking at a list of sad reasons we can't have it. So in the same way that we look at a miracle as a shift in perception, we look at healing as our return to wholeness. I said that a minute ago. And as a shift in the way we think, as the way we rise up and come back to that natural state, the way that we are created, and focus not so much on the problem, but start imagining that the solution to the problem is right where we are. So when we get stuck in our problems, or when we get stuck in our physical discomforts, you know, when you're sick or under the weather, however you would word it, it's hard not to focus on your discomfort. And we get absorbed in it. Same thing with our worrying, the concerns. Even if it's a worry about someone else, we can really get stuck or absorbed in that, and that's all we focus on. And then we are not contributing in a positive way for that to be truly healed. So I was thinking about, funny, Eula May said, I think you were out of the room at the time, Rosie, but Eula May said something about the skeeters, happier than a skeeter in a nudist camp or something. Well, I'm here today to talk about mosquitoes. I am, because I was thinking when I wrote the message, see how we get in tune? that it's sort of like a mosquito bite. You know, here's an insect that flies, it's going to be funny. Watch if your person sitting next to you doesn't start itching when I talk about it. But it's such a, it can land on us, and we can't even feel it because it's light, right? Then you get a little bite, and then you don't know why, but you move your hand over to rub it, and then all of a sudden it's really itchy, you know? So then you start scratching it, and then you keep yelling at yourself, don't scratch it, don't scratch it. But what happens when you scratch it? It gets itchier and itchier and itchier. And so I think it's a really good illustration. I think that if we could have a computer printout of the thoughts that go through our mind in a given hour, you know, pick an hour, especially if you're not in a good mood. If you could see a printout of the kind of thoughts, the things that are bugging you, those little annoying insect-like ideas, it would be interesting to see. Especially when you're away from that or when you're in a better mood, it would probably make us laugh to see some of the things that annoyed us when we were scratching and itching and called to see that. So life is like that. You know, problems are like that. They got this itchy thing about them that the more attention we give it. And the answer is to be able to find something else to think about, and prayer is good for that. Prayer shifts our attention from the outer to the inner, and we reframe our consciousness. We purposely, intentionally think of different things. Ernest Holmes said this. These are good quotes. Prayer is essential to the conscious well-being of the soul. Prayer stimulates us to higher thoughts and better lives. What fabulous logic this is. That's what we love about this philosophy. There's a lot of intellectual seekers that pop in and sit with us on Sundays, and we like that. We like that logic. We like that we're invited to reason, to use our minds on spiritual ideas. Holmes goes on to say, prayer is constructive because it enables us to establish closer contact with the fountain of wisdom within, and we are then less likely to be influenced by the appearances around us. We establish closer contact with that fountain of wisdom. That implies this great flowing, moving, this givingness of spirit. We call that the grace of God. And then when that happens, we're less likely to be distracted or influenced by any of the other appearances, the little irritating things that happen that bug us. The reason prayer works is because we take our focus off of the problem. When we do it well, we take our focus off of the problem. We let it go. Sometimes, at the end of the prayer, we say, and so it is. I release my word, and I let it be. Right? So we give it to God, so to speak. And then we are conscious of the opposite of the problem. What's the spiritual truth we desire? It's way more than this mosquito bite heals, right? It's about turning to truth, to remember again peace and joy and beauty and power, whatever it is that you want to reignite your memory around in terms of the spiritual truth of our being. And so the reason that is effective is because when we do that well, we have reconnected to our source. We stand in a place when we do that well. This is what we teach in that foundation class. When we learn how to do that consistently and move through life higher than the average, we then are connected to God, to spirit, to our source in a higher way. So the very best thing we could ever pray for, and probably all of us should have an affirmation such as this every morning, is for an expanded awareness of that connection, of that oneness with God. You know, to remember that God is the source of all of our good, that God is the giver of every good gift, that in the midst of truth, there too is God, no matter what conditions or problems are going on. In the midst of that truth, that knowingness that God is right where I am. And we need to hear this because, meanwhile, we're moving through our life and there are bills to be paid. There are things that need repair. There are challenging relationships sometimes that need repair. We experience illnesses or conflict in our lives. And these things are a part of living. You know, and there's a long list of other things. We all individualize that too in our very own way. So can we pray for those things? Absolutely. We pray for those things by knowing that they're just experiences that we move through. So here's the tricky part. So put your thinking cap on and try and follow me now, because this is where the logic can be a little complicated. We can pray for those things, but we do not pray at the level of the effect of those things. So there's cause at a higher level, and then there's always effect. And the problem with effect is, Holmes used to say, when you just try and change the effect, when you just try and get well when you're sick, when you just try and figure out how you're going to get money when you need money, then all you're doing is moving the furniture around. It's like moving furniture around. But when you go back to cause, you will be able to see why effect is looking the way it is. Because effect is always the result of something else. Usually our faulty thinking in one way or another. And sometimes it's just an unexpected something that moves through our life. So when I am called to pray for anybody, I acknowledge the effect. I don't pretend it's all good. That would do you no good at all if I just pretended it was all good. I acknowledge what's going on in your life, and then I use the words of prayer to help me personally rise above whatever you're going through so that I can see the truth. So if you're sick, I can pray for perfect health for you, because I know that it is this gorgeous way the human body was designed to work, that perfect health is already beyond the appearance of what we think we see in the illness or whatever it is. And that is what it means when in the Christian scriptures where Jesus said, judge not the appearance, judge not the illness, judge not that it looks like it's limited, the situation in any way, but judge rather by that way that God sees. Get that higher vision. We don't even need to figure it out, but we are invited through the prayer, the works of prayer, and the words of prayer to know a higher truth is revealing itself, no matter what it looks like. So I don't pray for your healing, and I don't pray for any miracle to come. I pray to remind myself what I believe. I pray to remember the truth about illness or financial difficulties, whatever, that it's just an effect, and that we often have to move through those experiences on this path of life. You know, it says many times, somebody counted once, I don't remember the number, in the Bible, and it came to pass. Didn't come to stay. It's just an experience, and we are given the capabilities, and this teaching helps us to see how do we move through it. It's that fabulous line from that Marigold Hotel movie where they said, everything will be okay in the end, and if it's not okay, it's not the end, right? We love that. So I pray to remind myself that this human body is glorious and incredible in the way it functions. It has an intelligence that knows how to recover from any appearance. I pray to rise myself in my view, in my perception, to rise above that appearance of illness and to know that perfect health already exists. And I pray so that I'm not tempted to see what's wrong and worry about it. I have to get out of that place. So I'm actually praying to see, no matter how sick you may be or how challenged you may be in any situation, my prayer is always to see the vibrancy and truth and the vitality about your experience so that I don't get stuck in the itch in a mosquito bite that has an opinion. I pray to see health. I pray sometimes to restore my own faith so that I can return to this truth that I so beautifully have dedicated my life to. And I think that's why in our five steps to treatment, the first step is so important, and that is because in the first step, we align ourselves to the presence, to the power. We remember what we believe about God, most important thing we teach, that there is only that one mind, the mind of God, and that we can unify with it, that there is that presence and that power, and that always, right where I am, God is. Now, when we recognize that, we're doing that inner work. We're not looking to change things in the outer world. We're looking to do our own work. And when I do that, when I get really clear again about what I believe, something else happens. There's this gorgeous little side benefit that I see in my own life and all around me, revealed this limitless well-being that is absolutely ever-present at all times. I can't see that when I'm worried or when I'm looking at what's wrong, or if I see somebody's life and it looks broken, then I have deviated from truth, because it is never broken. We are just moving through stuff. So if you feel like you're missing peace in your life, or you feel like you're missing some sort of goodness in your life that you sort of in your heart know you deserve, if you are missing joy or you can't see beauty, then it's just an invitation. It invites us to see where we have disconnected from that great truth. So do not go to that place where you start beating yourself up because you did something wrong. Go quickly to God. Go quickly to prayer. That's right. Prayer just works. You know, when I'm clear that God is my source, everything feels and looks and tastes like a divine blessing, you know. So I do my work so I can be clear as much as possible. When I'm clear, I notice that my body is more able to tune in to that self-healing ability, because I'm not impeding it by going, oh, this hurts, or oh no, that didn't just happen. I get in tune with that which is perfect, with that which is functioning well. I see the truth and I do not deviate it from it. When I'm clear, I notice that divine wisdom moves through my life, and that my word and my actions are way above average, and I have less conflict in my life when I'm clear. And, you know, it may be true that money does not necessarily fall from the sky, though sometimes it seems like that if you get in the right place. I've been hearing stories about Reverend Clyde's class. But money may not fall from the sky, but what I notice when I'm clear is that my attitude around money is completely different than when I'm looking at what's not there. When I look at what I have, when I give thanks for what I have, then there's no fear in that. It's a gorgeous way to live. Prayer, my friends, this is so important. Prayer is a way of life. It is not a way out of a predicament. What a thought. What a thought. Prayer is a way of life, not a way out of some predicament. So when we're aligned to truth, we are actually practicing seeing like God sees. We're looking at what's possible instead of what's wrong because we're using divine vision. And you know, we say here a lot that when our belief in God is greater than the condition we have been concerned about, that's when the healing occurs. When our belief in God is greater than any condition, when we go back to truth and we remember that, that's when everything shifts. That's when we rise and we see life from a different perspective. It doesn't matter whether it's mother's bunions, the close of an escrow, or a deeper appreciation for the immensity of God's love in your life. It matters not. Prayer works. I want to tell you one quick thing. Ernest Holmes was 26 years old when he moved from Maine to the West Coast to Venice, California. His first job as a young man there, he had not put this methodology into form yet, but he had already studied Emerson, and he was already using prayer as a form of mental healing, as they used to call it, the early metaphysicians. But his first job was working for the Parks and Recreation in, I guess it was in Venice or somewhere near there. And his first job was actually being with the young people, supervising them on the playground. And the kids became very fond of him. He was very personable, and he had great respect for kids. He'd never talked condescendingly to them, and they appreciated that. And they saw him as a friend, and they saw him as kind of a pal and a somewhat like a cool father. And so there's a writing in there's a writing in the book I left in my office. Aren't you lucky? I don't have to read it. I have to try and figure out what I was going to say, though. That says that certain group of boys had noticed that Ernest Holmes had this incredible ability to heal their warts. And they called him the Wart Wizard. Isn't that funny? And so Holmes said that they would come to him, and he didn't have it all figured out yet, but he did believe in prayer. He did know prayer worked. And they would come to him, like a boy would find him, and he would go, look, can you get rid of this wart on my hand? And Ernest Holmes would do the classic response. Well, do you believe I can get rid of that wart on your hand? Yeah, I do. You got rid of Billy's wart. So yeah, I know you can get rid of this wart. And then Ernest Holmes would take a moment to kind of look and see if he thought the kid had the faith to do it, you know? Just like Jesus. Jesus would say, do you believe? And then Holmes would say, all right, if you believe it, you go right now and wash your hands. Get all that dirt off your hands. And then you keep your hands clean from now on. And one little boy said to him, you mean it's the dirt that makes the wart? And Holmes said, well, what do you think? Right? And the little boy went off and washed his hands, and Holmes developed this great reputation of his ability to heal things, beginning with warts. Yes. Do you believe? It is done unto us as we believe. It is a key part of our teaching. It is the greatest gift we have, that when we gather together in the sanctuary or in the classroom or in those circles of conversation that we have throughout the week, that we come together to remember what it is we believe. And most important, what do you believe about God? It is time for us to give up any idea of a God that is an entity, of a God that has superpowers. It is time for us to give up this idea that we pray and we beg and we beseech, and maybe if we're lucky, we're blessed. As we expand our idea of what God is, as we learn to see God as greater than any personality that looks like a human being, then we can see and we can understand when we talk about God as being the infinite intelligence of all the universe. Oh, that's so much greater than anything human-like, right? God is infinite joy and peace that passes our understanding. And so I want to close this morning with this quote from the Science of Mind textbook by Ernest Holmes. Such perfect way to end today. Healing occurs when we emancipate the mind from every form of bondage through a new concept of God. I'm going to read it one more time. Healing occurs when we emancipate our minds from every form of bondage through a new concept of God. So pray, my friends, pray. Pray often and love much. It's so simple to rise above the law of averages. So let's take a moment to just anchor these ideas.